Now, I promised you a bit more joy in this hour, and I have in front of me joy and joie de vivre personified. Dorothy Crotts, welcome back.
Thank you, Brendan.
And Dorothy, you're one of our most successful artists. Your work has been shown all over the world, MoMA in New York, the Tate in Britain and everywhere else. And we're going to look back on that extraordinary career in life now through five songs you've chosen for us. Bit of background first. Tell me about your parents. How did they meet?
Oh, it's a nice story. They met on two yachts in Glendore Harbour in West Cork.
How very Montanati.
Very. Oh, I knew you'd mention Montanati.
So it's good to get in early. And yeah. So everyone listening in Cork knows where they stand with this situation.
My mother actually was born in Cork, went to live in London, came back with her brothers, and they were sailing around West Cork. And she was 17 and my father was 30 and he was on his bachelor boat. And he saw her and thought she was the most beautiful thing and kind of made some excuse to come alongside. And that's the start of it.
Right. And so your mother was back from England. So she was kind of a glamorous.
She was a glamorous
Cork of that day, was she?
English accented, which was mortifying growing up in Cork. Very beautiful, kind of singular. And it was tricky, her transition into Cork. She arrived wearing a Chanel hat.
Yeah. Okay, that set her up straight away.
Exactly.
I'd say, yeah. And what was your father like?
Oh, he was gorgeous. He was a gentle one of nine children. His family ran Cross and Sons Garage, and they used to make coaches before they made cars.
Yeah,
he hated it. He didn't want to sell cars. But he had to kind of keep the family going.
So did he kind of inherited the car business?
Yes, he did. His brother who worked with him died of cancer, so he had to keep it going.
Yeah. And did that stifle him, do you think? Yeah.
It did. He said he wanted to go to sea or breed donkeys.
Really,
so he kind of went to sea in his, in his free time, but not.
Okay.
No, he didn't live to his full dreams.
Okay. So what do they have in common, these two people?
A good question. Well, she loves sailing, my mother.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think they... very good question. I've never been asked that before. But I think in the beginning, they didn't have that much in common. I think she was this tall, statuesque beauty, and she thought he was this strong, very handsome, beautiful man.
Yeah.
And then I think it was suddenly damp Cork for a while.
Okay.
And my brother came along. He's 9 years older than me, Tom. He's a scientist. And then kids started happening. And their life was split between Montanati in a big old house with freezing cold and very beautiful. She had a very plain, empty way of looking at interiors. And then there was this little hut my father had in Fountainstown when he was a bachelor, and he built it into a slightly bigger hut. And we went there for 3 months every year.
Yeah.
So it was terribly privileged and lovely.
Yeah. And was it an artistic kind of household? Where did your artistic eye come from, do you think?
I'd say from the two of them, in a way, through their views on nature, but also my mother's, my father would pick the first camellia in the tree from the garden every year, and she'd put it in a vase, just one camellia.
Oh, yeah.
In the she had this kind of almost Japanese aesthetic.
Yeah. Taste.
Taste, beautiful taste.
Yeah. So tell me about your first music choice today, Sparky's Magic Piano.
I thought I'd bring a smile. Sparky's Magic Piano, if anyone of my generation might know it, it was actually American. I went back to listen to it. It's about a little boy who's learning the piano, and he's not very good, and his teacher tells him he has to practice, and he falls asleep, and it's about 18 minutes long. I re-listened to it the other day, and the piano starts to talk to him, and the piano says, "Sparky, Sparky, I will play for you for now." So the little boy starts playing Chopin and, Rachmaninoff and everything, and ends up in Carnegie Hall, where he has become quite egocentric and delighted with his own fame. And then the piano stops playing. And it was kind of tragic. I used to get really annoyed with Sparky.
Yeah.
But it was very beautiful in terms of the piano being that instrument and that transition into perfection, but that he really wasn't willing to work hard enough. And then the instrument created the brilliance, and he wasn't creating it. So it was very much about accessing beauty through music, in a way.
Okay, and where does it bring you back to?
It brings me, well, I learned the piano really badly in Cork and for about a year. It brings me back to, I suppose, leaping into some territory that you desire to succeed is the wrong word, but I think it's more about develop and kind of run with, you know?
And so how old were you when you were kind of getting that impression from this song? You were an unusual child then, were you?
it was about kind of a 7-8-year-old kind of thing, yeah, Sparky, yeah. I think. It's kind of childish. And we had very little in those days, if you think about it, you know?
Yeah.
We had no TV till I was 9. And I used to run down the road to my cousins, the Carneys, to watch Mr. Ed the Talking Horse. And the, yeah, Man from Atlantis, because they, and that was so exotic. But so it was, you'd listen to this over and over, and you'd listen to the Rachmaninoff, which they run the whole, okay, length of it. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's not just about some cartoony story.
Okay, here's artist Dorothy Cross's first choice today from Capitol Records in 1947. This is Sparky's Magic Piano.
Podolsky can sure play the piano good. I wonder what it would be like to be able to play like that.
Sparky. Oh, Sparky.
What? Who's that? Who's calling me?
It is I, your piano.
My piano? You're talking.
Yes, I can talk. I'm going to show you what it is like when you can play the piano well.
You'll really show me? You'll show me what it's like to play the piano well?
Yes. Run your hands over my keys.
I'm playing just like my teacher.
So that was not Daft Punk. That was Vocoder Vibes back in 1947. Sparky's Magic Piano, Dorothy Cross's first choice. I'm taking it that was Sparky before the hubris took, yes, control of him. When did you start swimming?
I started, well, my sister was a brilliant swimmer and still is, and I wasn't very good. And I probably was about 9 or 10, and my brother lured me to train for a competition in Butlins.
And was this getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning?
In those days, we got up at 6 and we swam from 7 to 8 every morning down in Eglinton Street in Cork for 360 days of the year, which seems like a lot, but now the kids are doing 3 times that.
And were you any good?
I was, yeah, but I missed Munich by 0.1 of a second.
Really?
In the qualifying times, yeah.
So it all could have been completely different, yeah?
I didn't train hard enough. And my brother is still coaching, actually. And I was good, but I wasn't great, you know? Bit, yeah, like playing the piano.
Like you needed some kind of chip of madness that gets you that,
yes,
extra second.
Yes, yes, yeah, yes, yeah. I think so. Yeah.
You mentioned Fountainstown then, and I think that brings us to the next song. It does sound idyllic. People will know Fountainstown and everything, but the idea of having a little shack down there, like, would you spend the summers down there?
Yeah. We did, yeah. And it was right by the sea. And my father made it less of a shack when my mother moved in. But it was freedom, complete freedom. You just go out on the boat. Nobody stopped you going out. There was no health and safety. You'd catch mackerel. You'd swim in a place called Shell Hole. It was really, and it feels now looking back that the weather was good a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was better back in the day. Mm. And come here, that was a connection with the sea started there,
yes,
as well, did it?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And why does the Beach Boys' Good Vibrations bring you back to Fountainstown?
Well, it was a time of kind of white jeans and stripy T-shirts and girls with long hair. And my sister was a surfing champion, actually. She won the women's surfing championships in Lahinch when she was about 15.
People were extraordinary. She still worked all kinds of things.
She's still very glamorous and a brilliant swimmer. She still does that. But I was the younger one. I was kind of the runt, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
And I was never a surfing champion. But and we went to hops in the local club. And it was really a beautiful time. And the Beach Boys summed up, you know, that sunny California. I later went to study in California. It wasn't a bit like the Beach Boys, but it really was of a time, you know, kind of groovy, flowery shirts and white jeans.
So when you look back on those summers now, how does it make you feel?
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Even though you were the runt, were you a little bit more alternative than the others, like a little bit more in your own head or a bit less?
I think so. No, I had friends and everything, but I was the youngest and... a little bit. I was swimming at that point too, though, so which that gave me some, because in Ireland I was succeeding, so it gave me some, it made me feel good because I was a very shy kid.
Okay, yeah. So that gave you confidence.
It did,
Okay, let's have a listen to Dorothy Cross's second music choice. Not the first thing you think of when you think of Fountains Town, but there you go, the Beach Boys, Good Vibrations.
I love the colourful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her hair. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me
I'm picturing them all grooving there down Fountains Town, Myrtleville, back in the 60s, 70s. That was Good Vibrations, Dorothy Cross's second choice. So, as you mentioned there, you did go to the Crawford Art School in Cork for a while, but then why did you go to San Francisco?
I kind of thought that art didn't exist in Ireland, and that's what I
thought.
Were
you right?
It was a little bit stagnant at that point. It was a bit still in the Paul Henry territory in a funny way, or Jack B. Yeats, or abstract big sculptures, which didn't interest me. But I still thought the far off grass was green. And I wrote to colleges between Iceland and South Africa and Australia, thinking as a swimmer, people were able to go on these scholarships.
Yeah.
And I thought it could work the same for an artist. And I don't know if I told you this story before, but because it's terribly important for young artists, I think. I wrote to these companies saying, I'm an artist. I want to go to San Francisco Art Institute. Will you give me some money? And my father was mortified at the time. He was still alive. But most of them didn't reply. And then I went on my and was working in a shop, and I got a phone call in the middle of the night from a man who found one of the letters in his office drawer in his and said, I'd like to help you. And he funded me. So
really?
I think, you know, it was kind of a blind faith in art and a blind faith that people might want to support it, which, of course, very few people do. And more people should.
Yeah, but there are some business people do like to think of themselves as patrons of the arts.
And like, I had never met him. He was not connected to the family at all.
Extraordinary. And did he put you right through,
He did, yeah.
What an amazing thing.
Yes.
Your father died then when you were 22. Was that a terrible loss?
It was, yeah. It was. It was very sudden. He had a heart attack. And, it was massive. Boomf.
It changed everything, In what way?
Well, I was gone already, but he was this gentle, gorgeous, absorbent presence. You know, he accepted everything I did, really, even though he did joke about going to work in a bank when I left school first. But he said, do whatever you want, so long as you're happy, because he hadn't, in a way. It's not that he was crying going to work every day, but, you know, he gave me a freedom that a lot of kids don't get when they want to do art.
So dad gone was a big thing.
Yeah.
Did your mother thrive? So she obviously lost her husband young. Did she thrive in life?
You know, in a funny
that?
Way, I often think this about widows. They grow different wings.
Yeah.
You know, it was devastating in the beginning, but she did. Yeah, she grew different wings because she was born in a time where, you know, bourgeois Cork again, she didn't have a job. You know, she was a housewife and she should have been more than that. She did become, you know, she grew in a different way. She was, as she got old, she got better the older she got. She had her slumps before she got old, and then she was pretty great when she got old.
And was she as supportive as your dad of your choices?
She was.
In life?
She had to struggle with people asking what my work was about because my aunt used to say, "What's Dorothy's awful work about?" You know, and she'd phone me up and ask me to explain it, and I knew it would go in one ear and out the other. Because I was making strange things, I was using cow's udders, all that stuff. But when the Tate bought Virgin Shroud, which is a big statuesque sculpture made out of cowskin,
she didn't have to explain it anymore. And it was like this...
What do you mean?
Because it was in the Tate. It was suddenly endorsed by the great, you know, the great institutions of art. So my aunt phoned in her up asking her what it meant. It no longer mattered. It's in the Tate.
Yeah.
It was so brilliant.
We don't know what we like, but we know that the Tate is... And did your mother go and see it?
Yeah, well, the first day we went with a different aunt, and we went, and it was almost like going into a... It was very sweet. It was very touching because it was in this group show in Old Tate in the Tate Britain. And we went in and everybody was really quiet. And we stood in front of it like we were at some weird altar. And it's called Virgin Shroud. And she's like this big, tall, kind of cow-skinned Virgin Mary. And it was gorgeous. It was gorgeous. My mother was so happy. She really was.
Was she? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what did she say to you about it afterwards? Like she said...
She didn't have to say anything anymore.
Really, yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, your third music choice is from Pergolesi, am I pronouncing that right? And from his Stabat Mater, and it's related to your mother, but I know it's also connected to your return to Ireland in the 80s. Tell me about Valentia.
Valentia Island has this wonderful cave, this slate quarry, where they use the slate to roof the House of Parliament in England and the Paris Opera House. And anyone who's ever been there, it's like this giant amphitheatre. And I went there, and occasionally I go off-piste from gallery shows, and I had worked a little bit in opera with Opera Theatre Company in Dublin and done some conventional Handel, Tamerlanos and things. And I had this idea to stage a operatic project in the cave.
Yeah, it's a spooky kind of place, isn't it?
It's drippy, and they put a Virgin Mary up way up in a little crack in the 50s, in the Marian year. And there was a big ladder where they used to climb up and scrub her every so often. So a friend of mine, James Conway, who used to run Opera Theatre Company, suggested the Stabat Mater, because I was looking at Orpheus and Eurydice going into the underworld and everything. But
of course you were, yeah.
But Stabat Mater is a very beautiful kind of prayer. These two kind of disciples are standing at the foot of the dead Christ and talking about the torment, really, of belief and faith. And there's one song which I selected for this called Quando Corpo, which brings us back to the body. And I'm very interested in the body and the spirit and how they come together or how they don't come together.
Okay. How do they come together or not?
Well, I think they do, but how do you describe that? Or how do we know that they are together or not together? And in something like Stabat Mater, where they're going quando corpo, I think the music, and music does it so beautifully, works almost like the spirit. And it's ethereal and fantastic.
And what did you do in the cave? What did you create?
Actually, I went down there and met the workers, and they're all covered in dirty overalls. So I asked them, would they give me their dirty overalls? And I'd give them clean ones. And there were two singers, a countertenor and a soprano, and then there was a small baroque orchestra. So what we did was we built a giant projection screen where we had filmed the machines cutting slate. So this giant screen in the beginning came from the back of the cave. It cost a fortune. It nearly bankrupted poor old Opera Theatre Company. And this beautiful little group of 14 musicians playing ancient cellos and violins. And then the workers, or they looked like workers, they were coming out from the back of the cave, and they started singing as if they'd come out for the Angelus. And they start going from this industrial kind of madness into this beautiful, perfect music. And then at the very end, it goes back into the chaos of the industrial madness and the noises of the blades cutting the stone.
So the spirit rose up.
I think it's just the human voice. It's the closest thing. And I've worked only a little bit in opera, but I envy and sympathise so much with opera singers because it's such a perilous thing. And yet when the purity of that sound comes out, there's nothing more beautiful, I think.
And one more question. How many times did that performance happen?
That's an interesting question, because it only happened three times.
And it's gone now?
Gone now. Three
so
times.
So you put a load of work into creating this piece of art.
Yes.
But it's like a mandala or something. It's gone.
It's gone. Yeah.
But it happened. And what's left of it? Memory.
memory. And the people in Valencia were fantastic. They put a chip van at the bottom of the hill and they had a minibus bringing people up and down.
Okay.
And health and safety would only allow 300 people to stand there. The last night it happened, it rained so much that the small little Baroque orchestra had to carry their very precious instruments to the back of the cave, and the projectors got flooded with water, so all the colours started going mad. And so it was really kind of not... the third night was not
how
that
many
successful.
People... witnessed experience no,
about 900.
Okay, but it was worth it.
Yes, I think yes.
You could, I know I'm being very basic here.
No,
but
no,
you
no.
See what
it's
I'm
actually,
saying,
this,
like,
I was
yeah?
thinking about
that
this
you put something in the Tate, and you know,
yeah.
a million people
yes.
can pass through
but,
it.
But you know, you get asked sometimes when you're younger and you apply for grants, how many people are going to see this?
Yeah,
it doesn't
sorry,
matter
I'm,
if one person sees it.
I'm like your accountant. No, I'm sorry,
you
but you, I, yeah.
But the next piece of music, actually, I could talk more about.
Okay,
that
all right. Well, let's take so Quando Corpus. From Pergolesi's Stabat Mater, and this is performed by Andreas Scholl and Barbara Bonney.
Isn't
yeah,
it beautiful?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. For all my Philistinism before we talked about it, that's pretty damn good. That's Quando Corpus from Pergolesi's Stabat Mater. I see people are now trolling me like to see how much I disapprove of this. you did a show, a piece in... Handball Alley in Galway in the 90s, a musical romance piece projecting images from the wormhole, and Tony says it's one of the most outstanding memories of my life. He worked with you on it. Another person at the same thing, two handballs in Threadneedle Street in Salthill, Galway. We projected the Atlantic Ocean racing in and out of holes in coastal rocks to the back walls of the court. Two opera singers sang to each other through the wall separating the two courts. The moon rose over Galway Bay to our left and our spirit soared.
Oh,
and okay,
my goodness.
That's where the piece of art lives on,
yeah.
in someone telling
yeah.
the story of it to someone else. So your next choice is it's to do with another one of your kind of capricious projects, which is it's Lisa Hannigan singing A Prayer for the Dying. And she sang this song. It was on an Irish naval ship as
yes.
it went up the River Lee in 2019 for Heartship.
Yes.
Yeah, and we talked briefly about this before, but
we
explain.
Did, yeah. I kind of couldn't leave Lisa off the list of five songs. It's so hard to do this, you know, as you know, with other guests, because I think her prayer for the dying is an anthem that, you know, is relevant as we sit here now with what's going on in the world and the horrendous murders that are going on. And in this particular case, we got one heart. We borrowed a historical heart that was found in Cork in 1863 and put it on board a ship. Lisa then wandered around like this lost refugee in a grey dress on board the ship. That was another incredibly difficult project, and it sailed up the River Lee. The Irish Navy were so gracious. They allowed us borrow it for an afternoon. And we had recorded a waterphone and glass harmonica and Lisa singing that pulsated out of the ship as it came up the river. And then she stood on board the Ellie James Joyce, and the same ship, and this is terribly important, had
yeah.
been in the Med and had picked up something like 18,000 migrants from drowning. So it was about looking at one single human heart that we don't know whose body it lived in, and then thinking about 18,000 people that could be at the bottom of the Mediterranean. And in that particular case with Heartship, which is part of Sounds from a Safe Harbour, which is this brilliant festival that run by Mary Hickson in Cork every 2 years, we only got the go-ahead 2 days before, which was, again, bureaucratic and nonsense.
Yeah.
And about 600 or 700 people stood on the deck, on the quay, and heard and saw that. And that's all. It never happened again.
Okay. Here it is, Lisa Hannigan, Prayer for the Dying.
The prayer.
Another beautiful choice from artist Dorothy Cross. That's Lisa Hannigan, Prayer for the Dying. And listening to it there, and you telling me the story, that happened, 700 people saw it, it never happened again. We can be glad it happened, though, can't we? Is that what it is?
Yes.
That we live in a world where it can happen.
And it becomes a story, actually,
afterwards.
You know?
And that somebody like you took on all the logistics of making it happen, which
and helped by lots of people.
A lot of people asking about, so Quando Corpus from Pergolesi Stabat Mater, that seems to have stopped a lot of people in their tracks there. The lovely to hear Dorothy Cross, I remember her well, back in the 70s swimming in the national championships in Leisureland in Galway. She was so cool and she was a super breaststroker. And someone else says, I knew Dorothy's dad. He often gave me a lift on my way home from school. I lived in Montanati and the walk from the bus was long. So clearly up from St. Luke's, that awful hill there. Listen, Dorothy, you just turned 70. How did you celebrate?
I had a fabulous, every decade I try and do something very special. So I had planned ahead to go to a little island called Misool. So you fly to West Papua and then get on a boat for 5 hours to this tiny island to go scuba diving.
Wow.
And it's an incredibly beautiful place set up by an English man and a Swedish woman working with the communities of the elders of all the small islands. And there's a no fishing territory and it's they have a foundation where they breed little leopard sharks to reintroduce because the stocks are going down. And it was just absolutely incredible, diving every single day.
Yeah.
Mm.
So you're not in any way getting old, are you?
Well, I am. It was a shock waking up on going, Jesus,
yeah,
70.
Yeah, I'd say so. Mm. What's the draw? You live out by the sea in Connemara overlooking the sea. What's the draw back to the sea always?
Well, something like, I'm not one of these sea swimmers in the winter, in the cold, but something like Misool, you just float. And I asked my friend Doug Allen, who's an underwater cameraman, where if you have to go one place in the world now, because so many places have been destroyed by pollution and everything. And he told me about this place. And it's very gentle diving. So you're down with these incredible corals and fish populations. And it's like flying. It's so, so beautiful. And there's no temp, you go in, the water's the same temperature as your body. You can go to night dives, there's no anxiety about cold. It's the gentlest, most gorgeous thing.
And is part of it then the fact that places like that are so endangered?
So
that's
endangered.
Part of the story for
so
you
endangered,
as well, is it?
Yeah.
You've also been made a sea of Ace Donna, which is a huge honour. Only a handful of people are made a sea of Ace Donna. So you are a wise sage now?
I'm a wise sage. It was very sweet. I struggled with it in a way. But then I thought, I'm 70.
Why did you struggle?
Because you're given, you know, it's not like showing work in a gallery or putting a ship on the river. Suddenly it's attention at the to the artist rather than the work. But then I started thinking about all those 70 years of things, and it actually it acknowledges all those things, like whether it's hardship or what, or the, you know, Stabat Mater in the cave, and that's lovely. And there was a great Catherine Connolly came to present the award, and I loved her. You know, we're so lucky. We've had four fantastic presidents in this country, and she was very in tune with what the work was about. She had really researched it, and it was a really lovely day. And it was very nice to be given it.
Yeah, that's okay. Stop making faces. It's all right, like, isn't it? It's all right.
Thanks,
do you feel you become part of the establishment or something now, that you were a kind of guerrilla tactics person doing all these things,
well,
and
now
you've been subsumed into the arts?
Yeah, I should have been more guerrilla, I think, in my day. Maybe I'm not guerrilla enough, you know.
Yeah.
There's still
well,
time,
you know,
isn't
there's
there?
Plenty of time. And look, I think we all get more gorilla as we get older. Young people think they're the gorillas,
yeah,
but actually
yes.
We care less and less all the time,
yeah,
don't
yeah,
we?
Yeah.
So I look forward to the next 30 years of work
Thank
when you,
you
go really crazy. So the last choice is kind of around what we've been talking about there in terms of the sea and the habitats and everything. It's David Attenborough with his version of What a Wonderful World. Why this?
Because I did want to end on I adore him. He's one of, he's a hero. There's so few heroes left in the world. He speaks his song so beautifully. He has done so much for nature. And yet it's a battle, battle, battle. And I dread the day he's going to pass away. And he will soon. And, you know, we don't have enough people like him to speak what he's saying.
Okay, just there's lots of text coming in. Isn't Dorothy Cross just superb? Her clarity of thought and speech is remarkable. A perfect guest for International Women's Day. Thank you from Sinead in Galway. Just lots of people saying that they're loving this. One person said it's been one of the richest hours of my life. People love your music choices. You could get a job on Lyric FM after this, I think. Please have Dorothy in every week to pick music. Fabulous listening. And lots of people as well with warm memories of Fountainstown as children as well. So Dorothy Cross, thank you very much. Congratulations on making it this far. Excited about your next chapter, and excited to see now that you're a sage, you'll have even more wisdom than before. So we'll finish now on your final song choice. This is David Attenborough, What a Wonderful World. Thanks, Dorothy.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, bright, blessed days, dark, sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.